Bicycle Praça.
That's our intro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bicycle Praça. This is the show where two Praça talk movie news, review shorts, and some cuck in between. My name is Ross.
And I'm Jody.
This week, just a lot of sand.
So much. And full singing.
My worst nightmare of locations.
I stole the intro.
Juntu. The intro is long, but
yeah, it's been a while, eh?
It hasn't been that long.
It hasn't actually, but it feels like it's been long.
No, I think I slept too well.
Oh, that's good. I have not experienced that in some time.
I mean, you know when you like zimzam afterwards, it's that.
Yeah.
I went to bed at like 1.
Did you take some melatonin?
No. Yo, my bro, the melatonin is piling up. I don't take that stuff. I got like 12 boxes or something.
I feel like you can Walter White that shit. Wait, bro, you are asleep.
No, it helps you fall asleep. It doesn't keep you asleep.
Yes. It's important. Oh, this is context.
Yeah, it's we're painting a picture of our characters and who we are in our lives.
Backstory. Exposition.
Black story.
Melatonin.
Melanin.
How can you say that?
Me. I keep saying
Melatonin for melanin, yeah.
I've said it at least like 5 times.
That's why black people sleep so well.
Exactly. They just rest easy with those hormones up.
Let's get into the review.
Sec, it's time for a review.
This week we are reviewing Dune 2, directed by Denis Villeneuve. Paul Atreides unites with Chaney and the Freeman while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, he must prevent a terrible future only he can foresee.
Yeah.
Kind of his mother, I guess.
Look, this book series has been out since it started in, like, what, the 70s?
Yeah, it's one of the classic sci-fi stories.
Oh, wait.
And has influenced a lot of sci-fi.
Yeah. Star Wars, one of them. I mean,
just
like
a bit.
The, you know, sci-fi series of...
But a lot of others, like if you watch sci-fi films and you read some sci-fi stories, there's a lot. You can see how much this is.
You haven't read it, though.
I'm staying away because the books get horrible.
The rule is, that what I've discovered, is you only read the first 6. Because that's Herbert's stories.
And then
his son takes over.
Okay.
So his son, they said, the first 6 books are amazing. Then there's like 18 horrible books after that. And... the reason is his son won't stop writing.
And they also they took other stories and just said it's Dune stories as well at some point.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me meet you with the cast before we go further.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya.
It's Timothée Chalamet.
That's
how you say it.
Is that how he says it?
No, that's how you're supposed to say it. Okay. It's T-H and then there's
the flanfon.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Lea Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, Charlotte Rampling. We're getting into the unknowns.
Oh, yeah.
But what a cost.
Yeah.
What a cost.
This didn't cost that much money. You would think.
Very little.
Sand is cheap.
All the special effects, sand.
No, it's location really helps in terms of keeping the budget down. But also, I saw the cost didn't make that much money that you'd expect.
I would expect you have to get people to agree to that to get a cost.
Yeah,
like
Rebecca Ferguson, she only made like 600,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Is she getting back in?
She must.
Yo, because 600 is
it's not a lot. Timothée made like 3 million. Zendaya made like 2 million.
That was mangeld.
Do you know what I mean? Mm. So you keep the cost down by obviously not paying your actors as much, but
and being a really good director that people want to work with.
My bro, because
it helps.
That if you think about Denis Villeneuve, he started storyboarding this film when he was a teenager.
You can see.
You can.
It is I don't. Okay, where do we want to start?
No, that's the start.
It's meticulous.
No, that's the start.
It's meticulous.
It sets the tone for the whole series. Yeah. I mean, this man has had a vision for decades of what he wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now technology has caught up. All these things that can bring his vision to life is in place for him to do
but
so.
But it's also in the hands of someone who uses all of those things in the way that they should be used.
Look at his filmography, bro. Like, he's one of the best directors working today, if not the best. Arguably.
I haven't seen any misses.
Even Nolan's got misses. Yeah. And I mean, he has zero misses, in my opinion.
Yeah. Across genres.
Yeah. And he regrets Blade Runner.
I heard, yes.
That's the one he regrets. He didn't like playing in someone else's like pool and stuff, even though that film is amazing. Yeah. Arguably also better than the first one.
Yeah. Also, there's only one version of it, which really helps.
Yeah, that does help. It's nice.
Anywho, come and start with the story. Mm. So, did you remember
part one? Where do you want to start with the story?
Did you remember part one, first of all?
We watched it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Did you rewatch it?
I went to go read because I was like, I don't know how much of this I remember.
The second one doesn't hold your hand.
No.
Through the first one. They don't remind you.
But as someone who didn't remember so much, and Denise said something about, he feels it's a standalone film, actually. He thinks that people could watch this and not have watched the first.
No, I think it's possible.
And I, as someone who didn't remember that much, I got that sense.
I get it, but if you want like the complete story, then should.
It enhances the experience.
You should do it double. Yeah, yes. But you can still watch this on its own. Mm. I suppose they give you enough because they refer to what had happened in the first film with his father, his revenge thing.
The prophecy.
Oh, yeah. But it doesn't hold your hand, which is cool, I think.
Yeah, not at all. So this starts off basically...
Paul is skitting with the Fremont.
Yeah, it's almost like, not right after, but fair, like really, really close to the end of the previous movie. Because the guy that he beat in the fight is... They like have him there in the beginning, like bearing him, right? So it's very close to the first movie's ending that this kicks off.
Yeah, so Paul and his mother with the Fremont... And they like, this is our life now. I need to get revenge on the Harkonnens. Mm. The Fremen are just like, we need to stop this colonizers. And he's like, okay, our things align. I'm going to do whatever I can to help you. And then he joins their little guerrilla task force. Yeah.
Just the little group that can, eh?
Yeah, the little group. They claim it, bro. Like, so in the I'm gonna be referring to things that I learned about the book as we go. In the book, the Fremen are the toughest warriors in the galaxy because of where they live.
Yeah.
The harsh conditions, how they have to literally like save all their water supply within their body.
You don't cry.
Yeah, there's a scene where what is her name?
Rebecca, his mother.
Jessica? Is she Jessica? No. It's Jessica. There's no I, okay? It's Jessica.
It's Jessica.
Lady Jessica, she wants to mamok. And he
just looks at her.
And then he's like, don't do it. Because he's like, save all the water you can. So that's like kind of how they live. That makes them the toughest warriors on the planet. And I feel like this is where you get that feeling with this little Marine Corps task force of the Fremen that are just taking motherfuckers out.
They are just like, and they engage, as you said, in this guerrilla warfare against like this massive, massive enemy.
I mean, those mining machines. I don't know what the scale of things are supposed to be. But I feel like he cranked it up.
So maybe before we go on, when I told you I haven't seen it yet, but I need to. Mm. You're like, you must see it in IMAX.
Yeah, you must.
And I don't know if a more perfect IMAX movie has come out yet. Like, just taking advantage of everything that IMAX brings.
Oh, I would say I wish I had seen Godzilla Minus One in IMAX. Mm. But other than that, especially in the recent times, this one is...
Everything about IMAX.
You know how Nolan is like, oh, I made it for IMAX. Mm. Then he is like, let's just hold my beer.
Hold my beer. And then I show you how you make a movie for IMAX. Yeah. Where I can hear people talk.
Oh my God. It's the flipping, the sound, the imagery, the scale of it. I feel like in Dune 2, he just expanded the scale of it.
In all the best ways.
Yeah.
Not just
Not like special effects.
I don't want to shit on Marvel.
It's almost like world building, right? Yes. Like you just like
it's not just everything is bigger and shinier.
Yeah,
it's there's more depth to everything, and everything is expanded in a way that enhances the story.
Oh yeah, and the world of Arrakis.
Yo. It's complicated, eh? The political intrigue, the...
Bro, if I was in this universe, I wish I was on like some faraway planet where they don't give a f*** about any of it.
And you just have the spice.
It's just like, just give me that spice. But again, I mean, it's the white man coming for spice.
Yeah.
A tail is on this side. And now they don't want to use it.
Yeah. And there's no saffron.
Now it's like, oh, can I get some salt?
Salt, little salt, bit of pepper, eh? Not too much.
No, the salt is also a spice. But anyway, so following the Fremen, his mother's there. She's also on an ace thing. Remember, she's pregnant.
Yes.
She's a Bene Gesserit, but she was like a lower tier Bene Gesserit. No?
She didn't like follow through.
Yeah. So that,
I think, okay, the whole way.
This is the issue with this f***ing Dune. Because there's so much backstory that gives you extra context for the characters and stuff.
But you I feel like it should be a series, eh?
Yeah.
Like a Game of Thrones. Maybe. Like that type
maybe,
of thing.
If you want to do that. But I think the Denis Villeneuve's Villeneuve, his vision is ideal for the movies.
Yes.
He cuts out the right things. He doesn't give you too much or too little. There's a lot of consideration that goes into where he wants to. He's made quite a few changes, but I think for film, this is how you do it. But again, when you do research and stuff and you learn about
so
this, oh my God, it's like, Jody.
But that's why I don't want to go into
you're
the
a
books.
Reader. I don't know. That's I don't know I'm how you are with sci-fi, though. I know you like horror.
I do sci-fi, too. Okay. And that's why I'm scared to go into this, because it's hectic. Don't want to get like 4 good books and then...
Yeah.
Like, okay,
no, you
what
get
the
six.
Hell
you
now?
Get six. So the Bene Gesserit is kind of this group of all women who want to control genetics of the best houses and the best bloodlines to kind of make the ultimate being, which would be a woman, ideally. And they kind of like influence people, important people.
And control
on the side.
Almost like society and this world through influence, not through directly being anyone in power themselves.
Yeah, they operate kind of in the shadows and stuff, and they also responsible for spreading the gospel.
Of the Messiah.
Of the...
The prophecy.
What's his full name?
Paul Atreides.
No, the one that's... Maparu.
He's got a few.
No.
Because there's
so in terms of the religious side, there's the name that they give the Messiah.
Yes.
Al-Ghaib.
Al-Ghaib, yes. Well, again, but...
Lisan Al-Ghaib. Of your bad dear man. Lisan Al-Khali.
No. We're going to talk about the actors. We're going to talk about characters.
So they do all this, and Paul wasn't supposed to be a male for the Bene Gesserit. So in the first movie, when the elder lady cucks her out or whatever, it's because she wasn't supposed to have a boy, and they can't control that. Yes. They have the power to control
she made it
a boy. And
which was summarized in the beginning of the movie again, if you forgot now.
So now... They're like, oh, Paul, okay, he's there. This is his path. And they're starting to think that he's this. So we just kind of have to go with it and see where it ends up. Yeah. But we have a backup plan.
Yeah.
And the backup plan
is...
not even that backup plan. The other one from Harker, the Harkonnen backup plan. So that's the introduction of Austin Butler.
Yeah.
Look, I didn't watch Elvis. So this was the first real time I think I saw Austin Butler. And he's pretty good, man.
You haven't seen that Amazon series of him? Kind of like the Band of Brothers sequel where they fight the pilots.
I don't watch war things.
Okay.
Unless it's like really good. And this is the first time I saw I was like, yeah, legit. He worked with a vocal coach to mimic Skarsgård's accent.
Yeah.
That's why they sound so similar.
So he's quite dedicated.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very good. And he was the other sort of angle to be the ruler and... Mm. So the Bene Gesserit could still, then they figured out how to control him. Anyway,
it gets so hectic. Back to the story stuff. The really important part with the Fremen and what's going on with the Harkonnens is that they are literally the only thing keeping the Harkonnens from controlling the planet.
Because the Atreides were screwed over by the Emperor and the Harkonnens. Mm. They were given power by the Emperor, but then the Emperor was like, whatever. Just take it back from them. Mm. So the Atreides bloodline essentially was wiped out, or so they thought, and the Harkonnens want to control. But Batista Shame is trying to...
he's so angry.
He's trying to... I don't know about... I don't know about it. I always root for Batista, but I feel like this one... I also think so. Like, some people find it cool. Some people thought, okay, he's getting more desperate and stuff. Mm. But, I mean, he was just shouting.
There was no balance in his role.
But it's not.
But he's still so good at it. To me, I felt like he had been given a specific direction. Mm. And he went 100% in that direction.
Which was
desperation.
I don't blame him. No. Because he got the direction from Denis Villeneuve. So... I don't blame him at all. And Shame, he's just trying to mine the stuff. He's just trying to, you know.
And he just gets all the pressure.
Manita.
Why are you not controlling this thing yet? And he's like, sir, you need to go take a break. Why don't you go lie down? Why don't you lie down your face into this console?
I don't know how anyone... so angry. I don't know how anyone would work in the Harkonnen government. No. You know, because you could die at any time.
I know. And when you must go see your boss, it's a bra that's bathing in oil or some.
Are you mad?
Who floats and it's just weird.
You either have him or you go to Freya and he's got cannibal women coming there and he's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to use you for parts.
Yeah.
And he stabs the person to test a knife.
Yeah.
I'm like,
just no, the Harkonnens are full on crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. But anyway, Shame, he's trying to mine it. They keep making his life worse by destroying all the factories. And then they replace him with Awesome Butler, who's more aggressive.
Yes.
But in that time, if you skirt with the Fremen, this is where Paul and Zendaya are falling in love.
Yes, because Zendaya, so her character was barely in the first one.
Yeah.
And she was the person that Paul keeps seeing in his prophecies, didn't know who she was. Now they're together and we see she is one of the best fighters she leads like a little group of the... Her tribe was their own little tribe also.
Yes.
And she's the leader of that group and she is badass in all of the fight scenes.
Yeah.
She's also the one that's kind of willing to bring him in. Like, because she sees that he's also willing to learn.
Not at first, but then she sees that his intent is not to push the Lisan al-Ghayib.
Yeah, not the prophecy.
So then she's
vehemently
like,
against.
Yeah, so then you also... Jesus Christ, this is
so much.
You also find out that the difference between the northern and the southern Fremen is the southern Fremen are more religious and the northerners are just about
practical.
Freeing the planet and surviving.
Are doing it under their own steam. It's not like we need to wait for
There's
a hero.
No Messiah
We
coming.
Can do this. Yeah. We have to fight and we have to be the controllers.
So Zendaya belongs to that group and how Paul wins her over is by... repeatedly denying the Messiah aspect of this whole thing.
Especially
he even wants to stay in the north.
When Harvey about them keeps howing duck, it's like, you see, everything he does, it's like, you see how he eats that thing.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not the Messiah. I just want to do this. And he's like, the Messiah is
would
so humble.
That. The Messiah would say that.
Lisan al-Ghayib. So that was kak funny. And then, the whole politics gets into it. This one is way more action-packed than the first one, which is dope. And the build-up to the action scenes is so
amazing.
Good. Anyway, so story, without spoilers...
That's the crux
the
of the story.
That's the gist of it, right? That, it's the battle between... We're on Arrakis, and it's the battle between Paul and eventually Austin Butler and him
Paul's
versus
character,
the gospel type.
And Paul's character growing and becoming a better fighter, practically a better fighter than just the one who was training and theoretically good at what he was.
But then you
for.
Also have to talk about the mother who's now got her own agenda after slurping that juice.
And became, what do they call the woman?
The mother superior. No? Supreme.
Yeah,
lady woman.
So it's a version of the
We should have really had a list of terms.
All the terminology.
Wait, let's see if I can get it. Yeah, but
preparation would be great.
Can you not?
Thank you. Thank you, Abigail, for reminding us. Because I'm too busy TikToking. While you're looking that up. So she's busy doing what she can to fulfill the prophecy for Paul.
Yeah.
Which is get into certain positions like this.
Reverend Mother.
Within the tribe within the Fremen people now.
Yeah.
So she's doing that. She's also then establishing more of a connection with her own little savior in the tummy through what she's done.
So, okay. Even though, like, how amazing I think this movie is, I mean, we don't want to get to our rating yet, but whatever, I still don't think it's for everybody.
No.
I think some people wouldn't enjoy it.
Mm.
It's not your Star Wars. It's not your...
you can see how it's influenced it, but it's not that.
Yeah, but it's not Star Wars. Mm. It's not your popcorn for the sci-fi epic type thing. It's a little deeper than that. There's a lot of themes running underneath. There's a lot of like imagery even that is like run on the art side of things. But, you know what I mean?
But what you're saying is interesting because there's two stuff I've seen with what people are saying about the movie. One is direct comparisons with Revenge of the Sith. Because of Paul and relating him to a certain character.
Yeah.
But what a lot of directors are saying when they see this movie is that Denis has made his Empire Strikes Back, which I think is the better comparison.
Yes, definitely.
In terms of what the movie is hoping to achieve. And you can see how much of an impact the Dune series must have had on the people that have made these stuff.
Yes.
Because to me, it tells that political intrigue side as well as the action stuff better than they did. That's where I'm at. But I mean, I completely agree with you that you can't just bring someone into this and be like, go and watch it. It's an amazing spectacle.
Yeah.
By all means. But story-wise, you're going to lose some mental.
You're going to lose some mental because then they're like, why is this baby talking to the lady? And in the books, because of the worm juice and all that, the child inside has developed the memories and knowledge of all the predecessors. In that bloodline type thing. And she's basically like a conduit for the Bene Gesserit that's coming through Lady Jessica.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
But this baby talks to her all the time and influences her. But I mean, the worm juice. She went for the worm juice.
She survived it.
Yes. She was forced to do it. When they joined the Fremen were like, you drink this stuff and if you die, you die. If you don't, then you are the Reverend Mother.
Again, though, it's like, Javier Bardem's character is so into the prophecy.
Yeah.
That part of the prophecy is that the mother would do that and become a reverend mother. And he's like, you know, in order for it to come through, you've got to do this part. I believe in you. And then she goes and does it. And it's just like, okay, cool. But another thing.
Yeah, that's after the juice. And then she goes full on religious. You know that she's got an ulterior motive.
Yes.
Because she has conversations with the child and stuff. And she's going to push the religious narrative on purpose. To gain power.
And her character is perhaps the biggest form of foreshadowing we have of where the story is going to go.
Yeah.
And also what the director's intention is with the characters. As you said, you alluded to, which we'll go into spoilers more, but there is a lot of perhaps misinterpretation actually of what the point of the story is here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that had issue with it in terms of telling a white savior story. Mm. And all I can say is just wait.
Just be patient.
Just wait.
Okay, what else can we talk about before spoilers? Because there's a lot.
Yeah, but it's so dense. But it's so well edited and well told that it doesn't feel like you're being inundated with exposition.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a well.
It's all organic. And that's why in the beginning when you said he's been storyboarding this for this long.
Yeah.
That meticulousness comes through so much. But what he gets right that Nolan can't do is all of the emotional stuff.
Yes.
Like
Nolan is very bad at emotion.
Yeah.
He's a robot.
He is. and Denis brings all of that in. I mean, Arrival.
Mm.
You don't even have to like
Arrival
prisoners. He knows how to do emotions.
Denis doesn't like dialogue, apparently.
Yeah.
He said he'd rather just film reactions and
do the story.
Yeah.
But he doesn't also make his dialogue inaudible order to
that is also
be spiteful about
that. But a lot of things are told in looks. Zendaya especially, I think. Batista, like I said, I had a little issue with. He was very shouty. You said he wasn't that bad for you.
I felt like he was desperate, directed to do that.
No, and I understand,
he did it. So for me, there's no character that is not bringing the A game.
Me too. I will say the weakest, in my opinion, was probably Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Just because, like,
actually,
was just there.
Actually, if I have to, he was the person when I was in the cinema, I was like, I feel like he's getting too old for this.
Yeah.
For what they wanted, like the gravitas of his role, he wasn't really
the emperor is described as an old man with a young physique in the book.
Then I guess maybe Christopher
he was miscast.
You don't think he's got those dance moves anymore?
No. You know, fun fact, Weapon of Choice, the with Fatboy Slim, there's lyrics in that song that refer to Dune.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what the
layers
are at the
upon
moment.
Layers. So look, for me, he was also my only weak
the
point.
The weakest. But how did Timotei step up, eh?
Timotei. Can I just say?
You can.
No singing. Bottom five movie of the year for me. Like, I'm singing about Timotei. But Timotei.
The thing is, if you compare the first one to the second one, you know, he's learning, he's doing the things and stuff. The moment there's a switch in the phone. And when that switch happens,
it goes.
Like, Baru, I see it now.
The command that he had on the screen, what he got right for me is that when he becomes shouty and when he becomes like talking to large groups and stuff and needing to inspire, you believe him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's got that.
Yeah.
Completely.
In such a small frame.
In such a tiny frame. In such a tiny.
Yeah.
He's way fish.
Yeah, he is way fish. But not when he's Lisan Al Gaib.
John Campea talks about him like this all the time about he just has it on screen like that. He pulls you in.
But he's so versatile. I mean, I've watched a few movies with him now.
Was his old? Is that about the boy? That Steve Carell thing? Was that?
You know, it wasn't about the boy. It was the one where he's a drug addict.
It's the Steve Carell film. Not about
Beautiful Boy. One of my favorites was Bones and All with the cannibal vibes. Also, different role, different character, whatever. I mean, he's an actor, man. He's like a young DiCaprio who's coming up and choosing projects
get young Pacino also. With him, like that. If you watch Pacino in Godfather, like how he goes from being that timid, you know, like Mike was the one that wasn't meant for anything and then becomes a tongueless. I almost get that sense of
For sure. So his performance was great. Zendaya, I mean, I haven't seen anything that she's bad
in. But for me, this was my favorite.
Nah, kwai me, bro. Like, she's gevaarlijk.
There was a part where I thought she almost missed her accent a bit early in the role. In this movie, where something Rebecca Ferguson said, and then she almost responded like American when she did it. And I was like, I don't know if she's going to be consistent for the rest of this film
She does speak with an American accent.
In this movie.
Yeah.
To me, it didn't sound American the rest of the time. It sounded like a character. But there was one part where it sounded more American. It's not that she's changing it to like British or anything. It just sounded less like an American young person to me.
Who else? I mean, Rebecca Ferguson also.
Oh yeah. Javier Bardem.
I love her, though.
You want me over in James Bond?
Mission Impossible. She's amazing, eh? I love her so much.
Yeah.
And then
the backlash with killing her off is immense.
I didn't enjoy that one bit.
Yeah. Javier Bardem.
Yeah. Steals the show. In a film like this, you don't expect like a comic relief, but
he is.
He is the comic relief. The way he believes wholeheartedly.
But he's not the guy about it.
No, he's not.
No, it's all
because
sincere.
Because he's capable. He's legit. He's a leader. He believes in the cause.
He's
does
in charge.
All the things.
He's in charge of a lot of the training for Paul Atreides because
when he was offered the role, he said, I will take it on one condition that you show me riding a sandworm. And then they're like, okay, we can do that.
We'll be the main sandworm.
And then in the first movie, they showed him riding a sandworm.
Amazing.
So
Neil deGrasse Tyson can f***
off. Yeah. Please.
With all the sandworm. That's not how a sandworm works.
Who cares, bro? Just sometimes Just let it go. Just shut the fuck up. Anyway, he was amazing. Mm. Skarsgård was great. Mm. Austin Butler, menacing, crazy.
I guess there's one we can't talk about because it's a spoiler.
Yes.
So we'll wait.
We won't get there. Now? Hey, girl, what girl? Say?
Wait for the spoilers.
Last week. Anyway, even Florence Pugh, New Edition. She is the daughter of the emperor. Mm. She's the emperor's daughter.
Big things coming.
I don't know what. Yeah, yeah, she's got like quite jewelry and kak. She is kind of the narrator of the film. Mm. Like every time there's a passage of time or it passes, then she kind of narrates as she's journaling. Yeah. Very cool.
I think the thing that I like most of what Denis does with the characters is that even where someone has a small role, you are getting so much out of big actors in small roles in these movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the first one, we had Zendaya for all of like 5 minutes and people complained and they were like, what the hell? You're like hyping Zendaya up in this movie and she's not in it. This movie, it pays off.
Yeah.
In this movie, we had Florence Pugh, bitchy. Mm. And then
in the next movie, it's Florence Pugh.
No, and I guess a spoiler also for what's going to happen with...
There's no cheap setups.
No.
There are no cheap setups in this guy's story.
And it's a 2.5 hour movie that feels lean.
Mm.
That feels like there's no it superfluous... It feels
wavy.
Yeah.
Like
to say.
But like, at no point in the cinema did I feel bored. Mm.
And felt important and felt like it's not.
There's no exposition dump of someone just doing a 5 minute of like.
Dare you compare this to Fast?
Oh God, please. There's no exposition dump of like 5 minutes of someone explaining this is why we do this and this. With
even when there is, it doesn't feel like
it. Feel like that
because Florence Pugh is essentially doing our exposition dumps for us, but it doesn't feel like an exposition dump.
All she's doing is controlling like the passage of time and explaining what has happened in her little journal. I think it's done so well.
Mm.
So in the book, it's like several years. This film, but.
It's compressing.
This is like 9 months. Yeah, they show the timeline. Yeah, that's kind of it. I mean, everyone brought it, and I don't think anyone cannot bring it when working with this director,
with this group of people in a movie that is this epic. I feel like you would stand out so much if you were like Christopher Walken, essentially was. And did you see that bra that got cut? What's his name? That actor that was in the Tim Blake Nielsen. He actually was playing a character in this movie that got cut for time.
He doesn't cut easily, though.
He doesn't, and he doesn't do director's cuts and shit. Like, the version is the version.
Yeah, he said there'll be no deleted scenes or anything, because it's like trauma for him to cut scenes, and...
Once it's done, it's done.
It's done, yeah.
Okay, anyways, we still need to go into spoilers. I feel like it's probably not necessary, but Ross, this is quite a nice thing.
I think this is... the best sci-fi movie I've seen in a very long time. I think this is a cinematic achievement in terms of what can be done to tell this kind of story, which Dune was always considered an unfilmable series. Mm. And I think what he has done here has shown when you have the right director, you have the right actors, you have the right conditions, anything is possible.
Yeah,
they are lucky.
That this didn't make last year's Oscars.
My bro, Nolan is so fucking lucky that this did not come out last year.
So maybe it tells you a lot about how I feel that I agree with you that this movie would have cleaned up.
Oh God, it would have fucking cleaned
up. I told Jenna that I don't know if I'm going to see a better film this year than Dune 2. And I know it's only March now.
It is a sci-fi series that has captivated Abigail Whitten.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's all you need to know.
What do you mean?
Ring
off the sci-fi that you watched.
Aliens or aliens or lasers or cuck. She's like, ugh. So, I mean, it's so quiet, Jody. It is astonishing. I can't wait to watch it.
I'm dead serious when I say I think it's the best thing I've seen at IMAX.
The movie ended exactly the same f***ing way I felt when the first one finished, which was, oh my God, I want more.
After 2.5 hours, you were like, yes, I still want more story.
Yeah. I didn't think that this, you know, another one would make me feel like that.
Mm.
And that's also only when I found out there's another f***ing part three.
The third one will be Denis Villeneuve's last one.
And but you know what I love also that Denis is doing is that it doesn't feel like necessarily this is a stopgap within a trilogy.
If he decides to not come back, if I was a director, I wouldn't touch it.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't, there's no one else.
There's no way.
No one else can do this.
But you'll find directors who are
no,
like,
they will. They,
guys, you know what? I can do 7 of these on streaming for you instead of 1 3-hour epic like Denis.
No, it's so quiet. I think let's get into spoilers.
David Austin die.
I think there's a lot of spoilers. Mm. That's one of them.
Yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy is in it for 2 minutes.
She's in there 2 minutes. She pulled a Zendaya.
Yeah. She was the Zendaya of this one.
Anya Taylor-Joy is Paul's sister. She's the baby.
She's the grown-up.
Yeah, the grown-up version of the baby.
The Messiah.
We didn't even talk about cinematography.
No. Because it was too much. So it was overwhelming.
The cinematography in this film, I don't even care what's coming out next this year. It's taking the Oscar.
It's not. The editing, the cinematography, the sound.
It's absolutely stunning. The desert shots, the sets they build, the caves that the Fremen live in, everything. It's so beautiful and considered and world building,
and it feels real. Like none of it feels like
190 million this cost, eh? This was cheaper.
It feels like 300
this
million.
This was cheaper than Ant-Man.
I know.
This was cheaper than all those movies.
Seeing as how you opened that door, because I was just arguing with myself, don't cuck on Ant-Man again. Compare.
You can cuck on Ant-Man again.
Compare.
Yeah.
A 200 and something million rand movie, dollar movie like Ant-Man with the sets and things that they designed in the quantum realm. That ripped off a lot of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like if you think about it. Compare that with this.
Yeah. Night and day.
It's, what were you doing with your money?
Yeah.
What were you doing with your money?
It's again, it's location versus
soundstages.
Soundstages and the void. Frank Herbert was inspired literally by Dunes to write this novel.
Yeah.
You can't film it in a soundstage. No. It's impossible. No. And Denis Villeneuve understood that and took them to the desert. They Miller suffered.
Style,
they were, I mean,
he's
okay.
George Miller's
acting is one of the hardest jobs you can do. No, well, whatever. Mm. But I mean, this was a difficult shoot. I mean, they in the desert, literally, they in these places.
And you can see it's that fine sand. That sand is everywhere.
It's got that shine in it. It's got the spice. Never a day, girl. Never a day. Yeah.
But
if you talk about, Austin Butler's world, the Harkonnen planet.
The lack of color.
So that was filmed with infrared cameras.
Yeah.
So that's how they could get the whites to glow like that.
Saturated
white. The issue is the way the shoot was set up and prepared for, they only had one shot at it.
Yo. And you know what? We'll just pull it off. We'll just pull it off. It's like, why not?
It's so beautiful. The fireworks that look like ink blots.
Mm.
Like all these things that it's like, yes, this is the thing that I want in sci-fi. A shit that I've never seen before.
And
imagination.
Now you talk about imagination. Right? I'm thinking of the shot with Stellan Skarsgård's character. Where he's got these balloons that are like his life support.
That's why I know. So why is that balloons there? But like, I don't know.
It's such attention to detail for... It's shot so well. You don't question the balloons are like laughing there.
It's not.
You just float sometimes coming in and out and none of it feels pretentious or like he's just doing this for the sake of I wanted to look quiet.
Yeah.
It all is there for a reason and it all feels like it just works. Whatever he decided. It probably is.
Yeah, probably is. Probably like an all in one. It's an all in one thing, I think. Iron lung, colostomy bag. No words. The thing is also there's a level of technology that is not because they fight with swords essentially. Mm. It's not.
There are guns, but the most important battles happen like hand to hand.
So the thing is that what they don't tell you is that previously AI, they already had their Terminator situation before this era.
Yeah.
So there's no reliance on AI and technology in that sense. So all the other...
We're still getting there.
Yeah. All the... No,
on they had their ChatGPT and
that took over the works. You know what I mean? So they don't rely on technology that much in this universe. That's why there's swords and all that jazz, which again, I think is just... So well done. Let's talk about the action scenes, Jody. Mm. Okay. You Which have the Harkonnen planet that fight so good. Mm. Also sets up the character, the relationship between Bobo Skarsgård and Austin Blackteeth. And then they
between the Baron and Fade.
Yeah, so, because it's the last.
And Austin's his nephew.
Austin's his nephew. It's the last three Atreides that they know of that they have prisoner. He's going to do like a gladiator situation in front of everyone. Obviously, it's like propaganda. Mm. So they drug the.
Those Atreides. Are some beefy Atreides.
My bro, they were cock beefy. And then the smallest one, they don't drug, but he doesn't know that. He thought he was just going to slug them. And then they say, ah, don't drug that one. Mm. Let's see what he's made of. Mm. And then he shows them what he's made of. Cool little thing, nice setup to be like,
establish
I can do this, what you're expecting of me. Then, the another big action. Another big action set piece is when they take down the farming thing.
Yeah. Sure. And I love that the first time they do it, they make it like the big thing that it is. Mm. And then the rest of the time, it's like, because they've established it, they don't have to hop on it so much anymore. But that first one,
yar.
My bro.
The way they're standing.
They're all in their little
And when they're fighting and then they're standing in the shadow of the leg. And then
that detail. It's like, so like looking at the shadow to know where they should stand. And it's just like, that's common sense. Of course. They would And if the way things move, these robots, because the robots that are there, like the vehicles and stuff, are all like plays on insects. So the big things are almost like spiders.
Thornicopters.
Yeah, the thornicopters.
I want to
go watch it again.
Because even the way that set piece plays out, right? They are being shot at. They're behind the leg. And they're like, the thing is explained that once the shield is closed, the helicopter man can't fire, and only when the shield opens, so they have to wait for that turn. And then even that moment where he's like, okay, I'm going to make a run for it. And that's kind of when he wins it over, no? Because he's like willing to sacrifice
his
life.
He keeps putting himself in.
But then he runs to the other leg, and then and the leg moves. Like, this is just
also the first when he loads the thing for her and she like she turns around and she shoots the bra that's coming at her and he's staring at her and she's like go
reload motherfucker. Even before that, the scene where the Harkonnen come down and they're hunting them and they go like the tension build up and they go they fly up to that rock and stuff and the sniper just hits them.
And
so good, man.
So I wanted to refer to this earlier, but you were talking about cinematography. And one of the threats, I mean, you mentioned sandworms as these things that can be ridden, but they are also a threat to the Harkonnens because the Freemen, because they live in that world, they understand how the sandworms work.
Yeah, they know the choreography of the sandwalk.
And
One, two, step, and slide, and around, and a
cha-cha, right?
And back and
forth. And then this leg must do the...
Oh, yeah. And it's classic. A black woman teaching a white man how to dance.
Exactly. But then the white man does it better. Like
does he, though? Anyway.
The way they shoot the desert.
Oh, yeah.
Where you see the wind going over the top, and you never know if it's a ripple of a sandworm or if it's just the way that the desert moves.
But then you know, they show you when the sandworm
really is about
to go. And that IMAX sound mooring and the thumpers, the use of the thumpers, amazing to call the sandworms and shit. Talking about production, the sound designer for the film, when the worm comes up and swallows people, he couldn't find the right sound for that.
Of course.
So
giant worms are hard to...
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, like this fictional fucking giant worm. So what he did was he took a mic, like a little telescopic mic, and he did the sound of him going... And he stuck the mic down his throat. He stuck the mic down his throat.
He did a scuba.
Yeah.
He did a scuba.
And he was, because they wanted it to have a dry sucking sound, and he couldn't find it, so he just went, and he stuck it down his throat. And then they sort of amplified it. He just pitched it and amplified it, and that's the sound you hear when the worm comes out.
I am the gaggy. I am the gaggy.
I was like, that's insane. Another scene when Paul rides the sandworm.
The first time.
The first time.
Yeah. Another prophecy. Another important part of the prophecy.
But it's so well done. The build up. Because you know what it takes. You know the training he's put in. All that shit is set up beforehand.
Yes.
And the build up to him actually doing it is so good. They call the sandworm and they're like, okay, he's going to. And he's like, listen.
And they're all sitting. Yeah, they're all sitting and watching.
But now, Javi about them. Even Javi about them, who's got all the faith in the world. He's nervous. And he's even more nervous when he sees the size.
Not that big.
It's like, that's a grandfather.
Yeah. He's like, not that big.
I didn't see the original, to be fair.
I almost don't want to now.
Yeah,
because going back. Yeah.
But it calls,
going back to the 90s now.
It's got like scales and then there's like holes. Flaps. Like underneath.
It's called crow's feet, Ross. We get this as we get old.
I see. But that's kind of how they direct it, right? Like they pull it and with then... It lets, and that's also what keeps the sandworm above the ground because I don't think they want sand to get into those sections. That which is so well considered.
So look, like let's say they did a series instead, they would have had some type of this is how he trains and this is how
we have a montage.
A montage, you know.
I wanna be the very best. Why am I thinking the Pokemon
thing? Yeah, I was gonna go with you need a montage.
A montage. I don't know why Pokemon popped in my head.
You must think too much coffee and controllers.
Just Timotei doing sit-ups and yeah, like filling sandbags and
and he's riding on snakes first instead of
Starting small.
Python.
Then you have the actual battle, which is epic. They use the sandworm to their advantage. They break. I like the strategic thinking of the Fremen.
They use
the environment.
It's almost like every single character and every single tribe has their moment to shine because they get to showcase the best of all of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's all brought into that battle. Yeah. And this is also where we start because, I mean, we're in spoilers now. So, biggest spoiler, I guess, is that Timotei is not really a hero.
No, he's not.
I don't think he started out to be.
No, he didn't start. His intention. Look, what did they say? The
road to hell is paved with good intentions.
That's right. That's exactly that story. And I mean, it's like, oh, you think you're helping them, but you're actually not.
And the stuff that he foresees, like the millions dying and stuff,
that's
going to happen.
I don't think a lot of people are going to enjoy the third
part three. Yeah, for that reason. Because they have established him as one of the best messiah characters.
It's designed for you to root for him.
Yes. The whole thing. Like two films are dedicated and do it almost too well.
Yeah.
Because how can you not be rooting for him by the end?
Yeah.
But we've got Zendaya's character,
which is different from the book,
who constantly cast that doubt. Like when she was so into supporting him and then to get to the point where she's like,
She's defiant of all the religious aspects of it. She doesn't kneel when she's supposed to kneel. She, you know, she defies in that way. I look forward to where her character is going to go in the third film. In the book, they do have kids.
Twins.
And the one becomes a worm-human hybrid and rules.
Lovely.
And rules for like 3,500 years. But we're talking about like six books worth here.
Yeah.
And I don't think Denis Villeneuve is going to tell that story.
No.
He
did say from the start that there was a very specific part that
the Dune Messiah book is the one that he's going to sort of adapt. Anyway, but this is after Timotei drinks the Vurm juice. Mm. And that's when the switch happens. Yes. That's when we have that moment of him actually stepping up as Lisan al-Ghaib, Moab. He's got a frach names now.
Yeah, because he's also got the name that they gave him when he became like one of them, when he became a Fremen.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's the Mahdi.
Which is after that's the Messiah, mouse
and
thing.
Then his name he gives himself is Muad'Dib.
That's after the mouse thing. That
so
survives.
A lot of like Arabic influence in the language. It was actually developed with a linguist. Denis Villeneuve tells a story where they created this whole language, and the cast had to learn it, like a Duolingo vibe. And then they would have a consultant on set, and then the cast would say their lines, and then the consultant would be like, "Actually, you didn't pronounce that properly." And the knee was like, number, what are you doing, man? It is a fake language. Like take it
proper
easy.
Proper band number. Proper.
Nerd. Anyway. Sure. So he has the switch and he decides to do the battle. And then it's the battle between him and Austin Butler.
Yeah.
Which gave me the same feeling as
Pedro Pascal in Douglas and the Mountain.
No.
Oh.
Don't guess where I'm going.
Sorry.
Not the best film, but Troy, the battle between Brad Pitt and the Hulk, man.
Yeah.
Australian. He's a mate.
Banner.
Yeah. Bruce Banner.
Eric Banner.
Eric Banner. Yeah.
Eric Banner.
You're like, hey, mate, you want to fight?
Yeah. Hector and Achilles.
It gave me the same feeling of that. Of the tuck, 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 tuck. And you see like Timotei and Austin Butler. And on paper, Austin Butler will destroy this little guy.
Yeah.
But he's like, tap, pop, pop. And there's one little way through and he has to take
and
the
And I legit you know, thought he was actually, that he got him at the end.
Yeah.
Because I thought that he was going to like,
yeah,
he's trying
but it's
to
a callback to the first movie when he was training with Josh Brolin, who we didn't mention, who's
also
great.
He's back. Gurney's back.
Gurney's back, and he's back in the best way. And he's like, he scripted him in his chops when he saw that Muad'Dib was poor. Like, he was
But then immediately he was like, I am your man.
He's we got like 900,000 nukes.
Yeah. Let's go get all the bombs.
We got like 900,000 nukes in the mountain, motherfucker. We can win this shit right now.
Yeah, that whole, like there we have the repartee with Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem's characters. It's like, you hit it in plain sight. And he's like, that was the point. He's like, it would never work, but it did.
But I think you never found it. So all those things come into play. I feel like that battle was so well done. The way he screwed Zendaya over, he tells her before that, I will love you until I stop breathing. And then he's like, okay, I'm gonna marry
you. And concubine over.
Although it is internet that this is just a marriage of convenience.
Yes.
We'll see how they take that relationship in the future. But she's intrigued by him, I think. It's you know what I mean? She's been the emperor's daughter for her whole life, and she...
And she's seen that her father was like the one that actually made all
the
bad
villain,
choices.
Yeah.
But then it's again, so many seeds are planted here for future stuff also.
I cannot wait for the third one. It is this series, I want to own it. But only when I get a new TV.
Yeah, I want... I want my own little IMAX.
Yeah, I must rewatch it by
you must get this whole thing is TV with the sound system that goes with it also because
the way they fight, the choreography, everything is like so well done. The swords, the lasers, the ship construction, like even that is like a metaphor for so much. The pyramid thing of the emperors in the ornithopters on the Arrakis planet, like all these things is so beautifully made.
Like even on the sound editing again, when you know when he now has fully embraced his like Messiah character.
Yeah.
When he does that thing that his mother does, where they say certain things and they project and the whole you feel reverberates
silence
and it. Like, I hold my back when you said
that. Yeah, everyone did. he was talking to us. Shit, I'm sorry. I was just eating popcorn.
But that, to me, shows you just how well Denis understands what he's doing.
Intimidate.
Because, no, man, but I'm talking about from the aspect of making a movie.
Yeah.
Again, now, comparing to Nolan. I mean, everyone knows I love Christopher Nolan stuff. But Christopher Nolan does inaudible dialogue. He has loud for the sake of loud sometimes. But that doesn't make
and
sense.
And he uses... Okay, he usually uses... who did the music for
Hans Zimmer.
Yes. Mm. Zimmer, once again.
Yeah, score was just like...
Score, all I mean, other level. 10 out of 10, doll. Amazing. Can't get enough. Lovely. He usually uses Zimmer.
Mm.
And I feel like they use Zimmer very differently.
Yeah.
The way that Villeneuve uses Zimmer is world building, tone setting.
There's a subtlety to it that subtlety, you don't see with
it is
with Nolan
considered. And Nolan is like, because even in Oppenheimer, there's like music almost all the way through.
Zimmer did.
No,
no. No, it was the other guy. Okay?
I think he's going to take the Oscar also. Mm. It's the guy that did Black Panther.
Yes, yes, yes.
The way they use music is definitely... I mean, I'm not here to compare the two of them. They make very different films. Mm.
But
everything
in terms
is
of
so
using,
well utilized.
Like
yeah.
utilizing a cinema yeah. to tell a story. Denis is like on a different level.
And
right
the special effects supervision, like from the start of his filmography, every time he has used special effects, it has looked so good and so real. Think of Arrival, bruh. Mm. Like those ships in the distance, that's when they enter the ship and stuff. I'm talking about Arrival now. Mm. The way it looks and it's designed, it's like you're tangible. It's real. You can feel it. Mm. Nolan and him have the same sort of consideration when it comes to that because... They know there's nothing that can beat tangible, practical effects. And Villeneuve uses that to the best of his ability. Mm. The CGI stuff, you can't even tell it's CGI.
And this is something shot in space, shot in different worlds, and it feels like real worlds that are lived in.
So just,
that, bro. That exist.
Nah, bro. Amazing. I absolutely love this film. IMAX is the way to see it. If you're going to see it, the... official spokesperson of IMAX, and Mr. IMAX, obviously, he said that they had trouble seating everybody, like in terms of the ticket sales and all this. I think people have been yearning for something like this. Something like, especially if you're a sci-fi fan, if you're a Timothée fan, if you're a Zendaya fan.
It's an event.
It's an event, and this is the one, you know when they said, oh, cinema's back? Mm. I think this is the one where cinema is back.
180 mil opening weekend.
Opening cash. Weekend, 180 mil. You just, that is already 10 mil off their production budget in their first fucking weekend.
I tried to book at the Waterfront, like, for this, and it was completely, like, almost 80% full from Sunday night last week up until Thursday, because that's how they opened the bookings for.
Yeah.
We had to watch it, so we had to, I booked in
Blu-ray. I went to Cape Gate on Wednesday night, and that cinema was about 70% full.
Yeah.
On a Wednesday night.
Which is rare.
Like,
that's extremely rare.
Full,
yeah.
But it's like a Wednesday night, that cinema was that full at the 7:45 show.
Yeah.
We only got out something to 11.
Sure.
And that cinema was like.
Did Jen watch it?
No, I went man alone. But I'm taking her.
Oh.
I'm taking her.
Yeah. She enjoyed the first one.
Yeah. I'm going to watch part one with her. And then I'm going to take her to see part two.
In IMAX.
In IMAX.
But please go watch it in the cinema. Please go watch it in IMAX. If you can't, it's okay, but at least go to the cinema for it.
Find a way to get to the cinema for this movie.
It is absolutely stunning. One of my favorites of the year so far. Mm. And next year's Oscars?
It's cleaning up, bro.
It's cleaning up. It's nach.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing coming up that I think will beat this.
I really don't see how anything
And I'm honestly, I'm a fan of... Timothée's work, I respect him as an actor, but this has honestly made me like a true fan.
Mm.
Like anything that he's in now, I will watch it.
Yeah,
because I watched it though
before I this even, and I will watch it with new eyes.
Oh man! The look,
give the Wonka franchise to Denis.
Listen. I am in the minority when it comes to Wonka. That movie was very well received and it made a lot of money. I'm in the minority. It's not for me. That's fine. Everyone has a bad day at the office. Mm. That was Timothée's bad day at the office for me, but it wasn't a bad day at the office for the rest of the world. So still not a loss.
Mm.
Timothée is the man. Zendaya is the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fucking wait.
Denis is the villain, man.
Man, he's another director. Anything he makes, I'll watch.
I hear you with the I can't wait, but I also feel like the need take as much time as you need to make the movie that you
that
want
though.
To make.
He has said that though, and my concern is that you know the studio.
Mm. I need to come back.
The first movie was the first one was released, And then after opening weekend, they greenlit the second one.
Yeah.
So they already pre-greenlit the third one, I'm sure. Mm. But now I hope they don't put too much pressure on him to make the third one. Because he is a director that you need to let...
It has to come organically.
If he says, I want to do another project in between, you f***ing let him do another project.
It took 3 years from part one to this one.
Yeah.
And that is with him having done all of that storyboarding and stuff.
If we get another Prisoners like in between...
It wouldn't be bad.
You don't remember Prisoners.
It wouldn't be bad.
It's with Hugh Jackman.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
And then Hugh Jackman's child is kidnapped. And they're looking for...
They almost killed
Paul
Dano. If
you don't remember it, we have to rewatch it. It's brilliant. Mm. Arrival also stunning. His filmography is almost flawless.
To me, there are no misses.
No
misses. There are things that maybe didn't make as much money at...
No, but that's the problem. This is this is his first film that has truly made money. Well, Dune 1, this franchise, let's count that, okay? But this one is already f***ing mooring it. It's gonna... It might be a $1 billion film. I don't know.
Ross, just to give you an idea of...
Give me an idea.
2013, Prisoners. Mm. 2015, Sicario.
Ooh.
2016, Arrival. Ow. 2017, Blade Runner 2049.
Come
what,
on.
What of that?
Come on.
What? Which one of those movies are you not enjoying?
Sicario is brilliant. Let's rewatch Prisoners and
Sicario. No.
You didn't do the second one. That's why it's...
You
not,
can see.
It's not as good.
Yeah.
But it's the planning. It's the vision. It's probably the French arrogance that makes this man so good.
Yeah.
And he must just keep doing his thing until he dies. Keep supplying the shit. Because it's like drugs.
Yeah.
It's like spice, bitch.
Also, go watch it because Zendaya's stunt double is...
Oh, wait!
Yeah, Alex J.
Alex J, not the DJ. She's a stunt woman, and she has... Zendaya has some fight scenes in this film, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's Alex J's work.
And it's incredible.
It's incredible. And I've seen Alex J's Instagram. Like, I wouldn't take her on.
No.
That's for damn sure.
No. Bare-handed with weapons. I don't stand any type of chance.
I could have a gun, and
she would f*** us.
Yeah, for sure.
100%.
So, hopefully we get her on the show.
Mm.
Abby?
Producer, make a plan.
Anyway, I want to shout out to Matei Chalamet.
Birthday girl upcoming.
Oh, yeah. Abby's birthday is coming up.
So, what, two shout outs in two episodes in a row? Girl, look how she's glowing.
Well, thank you.
40 years of production.
40 years of life, 3 years of production. Those three, that's the sweet spot.
That's the ones that count the most. So, yeah, we will be celebrating Abby's birthday. You can join us at the... No.
We love you, Abigail.
Yeah, I love you, Abigail.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah, so if someone wanted to come to the Arrakis and get some spice from us, Jody, how would they do that?
They can find us Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, Bicycle Brasser Podcast. They can write to us, bicyclebrasser@gmail.com.
Stay safe, everyone. And remember, be good for Knox
and Charlie.